I'm John Batts with my friend and colleague, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. And we're off to Europe. Fraser Howey, co-author of Red Capitalism, the Fragile Financial Foundation of China's Extraordinary Rise. Fraser, a very good day to you. The meeting in APEC between Xi Jinping and President Biden. I'm told generally that what Xi Jinping most desires now is for the foreign investor class to return. We've had headlines for months and months, maybe years, of foreign investors pulling back. Does that describe what Xi needs, and is it enough? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Hello, Gordon. He wants to return, without question, to some sort of normal investment climate. So what he exactly said, who knows, but he certainly wants rid of trade tariffs, trade restrictions. He wants lifting of the high-tech sanctions. He wants basically, the green light again and say, yeah, China's, everything's fine in China. Keep investing. It's not a problem. As if somehow the past 3, 5, 7, 10 years have all just been a dream. His economy is certainly stuttering. It's got major problems, but even the return of foreign investors, which isn't going to happen quickly anyway, even if that does happen, it's fundamentally not going to solve the problems he's now facing.
The story is that the decisions made by Xi, for example, about how a company has to be dominated by Chinese Communist Party members, they have to sit on the board or they have to participate in decision-making. Is that part of his conversation, that he can lift or amend those decisions? Because they were part of the alienation for 10 years.
That's the point. He's not going to lift those at all. None of that's changing. So even if he comes and offers nice words or somehow even says it's all okay, China's fine to invest in, none of the things he's been putting in place over the past 10 years have been removed. And he is there is no way he can have any credibility left within the party and within China if he now starts to rip up the very rules he's been so hard working to put in place.
Gordon, you have a question for Fraser.
Fraser, to go back to the point that you emphasized, it seems like there are fundamental problems with Xi Jinping's conception of the Chinese economy. And until he actually starts to reverse what he's put in place, how can the foreign investment community actually return to China? Because it's been so anti-foreign and indeed anti-private business full stop.
Well, I think you're right, Gordon. I think how it returns or how it operates there is it needs to somewhat sort of change its frame of reference. Previously, in a broad sense, China was the factory of the world, and you sold to China as well from that factory. So it was a single production place selling globally within China and external to China. I think companies who still want to be in China, and clearly a lot of companies do want to be in China because they believe or they're selling a lot of their products into China, whether it be iPhones or whatever. So they can now basically have a bit of their company building in China or manufacturing in China for the Chinese market. But for the rest of the world, they basically need to now go to Vietnam, somewhere else in Southeast Asia, Mexico, or elsewhere, or even in the case back to Japan or back to the US or to Europe, and you manufacture for your non-China markets outside of China. So you're naturally having to split your business. There is no return, though, to where we were before. China has changed dramatically. The environment within China has changed dramatically, and that isn't changing, whatever Xi may, you know, want from this summit.
Fraser, is it accurate to say that it's not only the U.S. that is now reluctant to trust China in terms of business, but also European powers? I'm thinking notably of Germany. Has that changed as well?
There are certainly some voices in Germany who have who understand the dangers of dependency on China. I think there is, though, a large body still in Germany, particularly, who think, no, it's all fine. We can continue to work with China. They haven't learned any of the lessons of engagement with Russia and the geopolitical risks of dealing with that country. They see China as a different type of issue. So it's mixed. They're getting there slowly. And sadly, though, the Germans have been very slow. And of course, Germany being the biggest economy in Europe, it's essential that they understand the risks they're running. But it's been much, much slower than in the States.
Gordon?
So, Fraser, it's not just a question of foreign investors withdrawing cash. I mean, the third quarter of this year was the first time since numbers were kept since 1998 that foreigners withdrew more in investment from China than they put in. But it seems that the Chinese themselves are starting to bail because the family trust that owns a big block of Alibaba Group stock is now selling as well. Do you think that domestic private entrepreneurs in China are going to withdraw capital, or are they going to stay in China?
No, they've already been withdrawing capital. The question is, though, of course, their businesses, their underlying assets, where they've got their factories and whatever, is in China. You can't just pick those up and leave. But you have already seen across Singapore, other areas in Southeast Asia, into Europe, even into the States, you've seen over the past few years, Chinese moving money out of, rich Chinese moving some money at least out of China. They understand the problems of China far better than we do. And I think particularly after the COVID lockdown, any trust that was left in the Communist Party has evaporated.
Fraser, I'm looking at the Chinese economy right now, and there's reason to believe it's following a deflation model that we saw in Japan once. Is that an analogy, or is this all by itself because of the Chinese Communist Party's business plan?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, there is this sort of the Japan-like scenario, and I think there is some merit there. Every country, of course, is different, and you're never going to see exactly the same problems. But you do, I think the deflation just is reflective very much of the funk that is the Chinese economy is in. And there's nothing really to see how it's going to change. This isn't just a case of changing policy, because the policy comes directly from the nature of the government and the nature of the governance in China. And, you know, we know that's not changing. Xi Jinping isn't changing that. We know the demographics are very bad. We know that property, which has got a long way to fall still, is a huge burden on the economy. And so you wrap all these things together, it's very easy to see how you're going to have this long deflationary cycle or this long slowing growth cycle. And, you know, it will be distant memories, the Chinese miracle economy. That's gone. And even, you know, whether this will be the Chinese century, it probably won't be now. China is simply not going to achieve what so many predicted, let's say, 20 or 30 years ago.
Gordon, you have a question.
So, Fraser, probably a majority opinion in the China watching community believes that China can avoid a crash. They think of, you know, decades long Japanese like stagnation or recession. Do you think that China can avoid a crash, you know, a la 2008 or whatever? Or do you think that they can actually just sort of carry on it and slowly deflate the economy?
Yeah, it's always difficult to know. This word crash is always difficult in financial markets because it so often relates just to the stock market falling. And of course, the stock market has been moribund for a long, long time in China. The levels, the index levels the Chinese stock market is at are basically levels that were first seen literally 20 years ago. So in that sense, Chinese stocks, we know, have performed very poorly. We know many stocks have already crashed and are way, way, way off their highs. I think what they can do is they can ultimately avoid the fall, but they are able to clamp down in certain ways to avoid the worst excesses. The Chinese government does control large parts of the economy. It doesn't mean it, like I say, doesn't mean that it becomes, it can avoid these, the outcomes. It can't avoid the hangover of the excesses, but it can mitigate them to some extent by drawing out that pain, by socializing the losses. And so to that extent, it is able to take acute problems and make them into chronic long-term conditions. But then, of course, you've got to live with a chronic long-term condition, which means much, much slower growth, a populace which isn't earning anymore, and basically a populace that just wants to lie flat and is simply not bought into the China dream that Xi Jinping has.
Fraser Howey, co-author of Red Capitalism, The Fragile Financial Foundation of China's Extraordinary Rise. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Beck.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.